balls.
I awoke on the ground in an alley behind the Oblivion. I was damp from the rain, and my back made me feel like the doormat at the entrance to a fat farm.
Boss, can you hear me?
I hear you, Harv. What happened?
You got lucky. The trajectory of your fall and the wind at that height took you back toward the building rather than straight down to the pavement.
It what?
You hit the sloped portion of the building about 15 stories up and slid to the ground. Your armor was maxed, so it managed to absorb the majority of the impact.
I fell? I actually fell?
It's called gravity, Boss. Not a new concept.
For a nano, I thought that I had dreamed the entire scene with Carol and her alien pals, which would have been okay with me, because that would mean that there wasn't a spaceship in orbit waiting to obliterate the city. I would just have to deal with a mad lunatic superwoman. But no, that would be too easy. It had to be real.
I was offline for a while. I guess the interface was affected by the power surge from the armor, but everything seems to be working fine now.
Yeah, speak for yourself. Where's Tony?
I don't know. I lost him when we fell from the building. Should we search for him?
There's no time. We need to get inside and stop Flora.
How do you know she's inside?
I touched the button Carol had given me. Trust me, she's in there. And we need to kick her well-formed purple ass. Fat Elvis went back to his post at the main entrance to the Oblivion, soaking wet and limping. Another bouncer, this one a tall black man with a thick neck, met him at the door.
Where'd you go? I'd leave my station at the bar.
We had a situation. Two guys came looking for Flora.
Did you get him?
Yeah, we got him. One guy's up on the roof, other guy fell.
He fell?
Yeah, we're gonna need a street cleaner. Cover the door for me another couple of nanos, okay?
Man, I gotta get back to the bar.
Look at me. I can't work the door like this. Just let me get cleaned up a little.
Okay, but make it fast.
Thank you.
Oh, and by the way, Steve?
Yeah?
Your name is James.
Tweet me.
I dropped to the floor as my now pointless holler disguise vanished. The blast went over my head and blew apart a portion of the wall behind me. I scrambled to my feet and, staying low, charged the guy head on. I hit him in the midsection like a bull against a slow matador and sent him into the street. You know, for a B-level casino, this place sure is hard to get into. The bouncer grabbed me under the arms and heaved me over his head. I rolled to my feet and popped into a crouch, just in time to see him swing his big booted foot toward me.
That's because you're a C-level punk.
Oh, smart and witty. I'm surprised some little Priscilla clone hasn't snatched you up.
You want some more, punk?
Oh, please. I've been roughed up worse by grandmothers. Which was actually true, but that's another story. A bouncer closed in, sensing the kill. He threw the punch, but it never reached my face. Thanks for running that combat routine again, Harv.
I didn't run any routine.
You didn't?
You told me it was morally wrong, so I haven't restored it.
Huh. I adjusted my coat. Cool.
Before you get too carried away, I did increase the levels of epinephrine and norepinephrine in your body. I figured you wouldn't mind a little boost. It's a normal reaction to trouble. I just sped it up some.
Shut up, Harv. You're killing the moment. I picked the bouncer's head up off the ground, popped my gun into my hand, and gave him a good long look at the business end. Where is Flora?
Oh, no.
I stuck the barrel into his mouth. Hey, buddy. You know how to drink a blast of martini? Through a long metal straw, one shot at a time.
Boss, he can't talk with your gun in his mouth.
I removed the gun from his mouth and placed it against his forehead. You're a smart guy. So ask yourself, is Flora and her to-die-for body really worth dying for? The two of us locked eyes for a long, hard nano.
Kill me now.
Okay, that was a reaction I should have been expecting, but I wasn't. He'd called my bluff. I may be a tough guy, but I'm not a killer. Especially since if I killed the guy, he really wouldn't have been able to talk. Plus, I understand that it's really hard to get brains out of cotton.
Oh, for Steve's sake. Is your head filled with anything besides testosterone?
I turned and saw Ona standing behind me. She was dressed in a tight black pantsuit with a long black coat. What are you doing here?
Speeding things along. I'm sorry, but the gun thing is just too macho. Caveman-like. It's so early 2000s.
I admit it's not my preferred choice, but I'm kind of in a hurry here. She silenced me with a gesture, then brushed her long fingers gently across the bouncer's cheek. He smiled widely, and his eyes rolled back in his head.
Where is Fora?
Main ballroom. Follow the hallway through the double doors at the end.
Thank you. You can pass out now. Now, wasn't that easier?
I'll give you that one.
I have to confess, Zack. I haven't been totally honest with you.
That's an understatement.
But I'm here to help set things right.
Okay, then. But there's one rule from here on out.
What's that?
You do everything I say. You follow my lead every step of the way. You got that?
I'll think about it.
Listen, Ona, I have experience with this sort of thing.
Yes, I'm sure you do, Zack. But I'm the most powerful, most advanced, most intelligent superhuman around.
You forgot most humble.
We'll play it by ear. I'll take anything you say into account before I act.
She headed into the casino. Great. Now I have her to worry about.
No one ever said saving the world would be easy.
Ona, Harv, and I strode quickly down the hallway toward the main ballroom. Three warriors off to battle. Actually, I'm sure we looked more like a supermodel, a hologram, and a ragged PI, but we felt like warriors, and that's what counts.
I'd suspected for some time now that Fora was up to something. I'd been hearing a lot of strange things.
Like what?
Her cash flow had increased, for one. She was getting sizable donations from her friends and followers. There were equipment purchases as well.
What kind of equipment?
Material for scientific research. A lot of heavy construction equipment and raw materials. That's what worried me.
That's why you set up the dinner.
I wanted her near me. I thought maybe I could figure out what she was up to. Maybe I could...
read her mind?
Yes. But then the murder occurred. And I thought that perhaps I'd been wrong all along. Maybe it wasn't Fora after all.
She played you.
Yes.
Did you know she was a Psy?
I've known of my own psionic abilities for only a short while. I assume that Fora was still unaware of hers. After all, I am older and smarter.
It's quite evident that your sister has known about her psionic abilities for some time, Miss Thompson, as evidenced by her skillful and large-scale use of them.
Contact the Vegas police, Harv. Tell them there's an emergency at the Oblivion.
The department is fully under Miss Thompson's control, remember?
Get the Frisco police, then.
They've already declined to intercede.
Then get me the cops from New Reno or New Carson City or New Indian Springs. I don't care.
They won't be able to get here in time. You know that, don't you?
Sure, but I don't want to admit it.
Plus, Fora would probably turn them into followers.
Well, it looks like we're gonna have to do this ourselves. We reached the doorway to the main ballroom. It was thick, ornately sculpted faux wood, double wide, and like everything else in the casino, painted one shade lighter than Black Hole. Harv, what other entrances are there to this room? Harv flashed holographic blueprints on the wall.
According to blueprints currently on file, this is the main entrance. There is a similar, albeit smaller, doorway on the southern wall, as well as two emergency exits along both the eastern and western walls.
What about air ducts?
Several, although gaining access will be tricky with the current air filtration system.
Okay, here's how we play it. Ona, you're our ace in the hole. You'll enter through this emergency door here. Harv and I will come through the main entrance and create a diversion. We'll make our move in 5 minutes. That should give you enough time to get into position. Make your entrance quietly when you hear the commotion. With a little bit of luck, maybe we'll be able to take four of us. The doors beside us suddenly opened wide. Light so bright it nearly knocked me over erupted from within.
Hello, sister dear. You're right on time.
It took me a nano to realize. The voice was inside my head.
Fora!
You know, I definitely liked her better when she was dead. The Oblivion Ballroom was huge, which was a surprise because it wasn't supposed to be, at least not according to the casino's blueprints. But as Harv had mentioned, there had been some recent secret construction inside the casino, and it was clear now that the renovations had been major. For one thing, we were on the ground floor of a 50-story building, but the ceiling was nowhere in sight. Fora had hollowed out the center of the building, turning it into a gigantic donut with the ballroom at the center as the hole. Apparently, the ballroom did have a ceiling, but it was 50 stories up. Well, out of my sight.
Her ceiling isn't higher than mine, is it?
Within the brightly lit confines of the room were a few thousand people. High rollers, card sharks, slot machine junkies, tourists, cocktail waitresses, showgirls, lounge singers, cab drivers, police officers, and hookers. The revved-up throng of onlookers was a cartoonish cross-section of New Vegas society. And at the center of it all, standing atop a well-lit elevated stage, was Fora Thompson. She was every bit a Thompson quad. She was tall and lithe and purple-skinned, beautiful by every conceivable measure. She was dressed in black, of course, faux leather pants and jacket over a tight shirt made of a shimmery fabric that sparkled like a starfield on a night sky. Her hair, dark as ever, was slicked down and back and hung straight from her head, so stiff it looked as though it could cut you if you touched it the wrong way.
Just once I'd like to take a villain by surprise, sneak up behind them unnoticed, hit him over the head with the butt of my gun, slap the cuffs on him, and call it a day. Is that too much to ask?
That's rhetorical, right?
Yes.
He tends to talk to himself at times like this. You get used to it.
Fora was surrounded on stage by an array of machinery, lots of large tubes, flashing lights and such, that fed in and or connected to three cylindrical vessels, each one 2 meters tall and made of heavy transparent polymer. Not surprisingly, Tua was imprisoned in one vessel and Freya in another. They were conscious and aware of what was going on, but I could tell from the anguished looks on their faces that they'd spent a lot of time trying to escape or break the polymer prison cells, clearly to no avail. You didn't have to be a detective to figure out for whom the third cylinder was intended.
As you can see, Ona, I knew you'd come. You were powerful enough to stop me from teleporting you here, but I knew you were stubborn enough to come under your own power. I've saved a place for you, so come on down and join the family.
When I do, it will only be to beat you to a pulp.
Suit yourself, dear. So long as we're all together at last.
I'm going to rip that smug look off your face!
Fora pointed at the approaching Ona. The simple gesture sent Ona reeling back past me, crashing to the ground.
You'll come when I want you. Just like everything else in this little game, nothing happens unless I want it to happen.
Ona stood up and gave me a questioning look.
You know, Zack, you're right. I'll let you take the lead here. What do you want me to do?
Keep her talking. Keep her attention focused on you. I'll think of something. Just don't make her any madder.
Right.
She took a deep breath to calm herself and smiled, cautiously walking a few steps toward Fora and away from me.
Now, dear sister, let's talk about this. Just like we were doing a few nights ago at my party. And as I recall, you ruined the evening by dying.
Your parties are boring, Ona. I made it more interesting.
Oh, yes. Nothing livens up a party like a little death.
True. Which means you're going to love this party.
While the two quads did their passive-aggressive banter, Harv and I did a quick visual reconnaissance of the room. I focused my thoughts at Harv.
Do you see Tony?
I got him. He's at the front, just behind the stage.
Harv took control of my eye lens and zoomed in on the stage. Sure enough, at the foot of the platform, just behind Tua and Thria's polymer cells, stood Tony. He looked a little battered and bruised, but he was alive.
Bingo. What do you think? Is he under Fora's control?
I don't know. I can't tell whether or not he's still wearing the side blockers.
I knew you were up to something, Fora. That's why I invited you to my home.
You are almost there, Ona. Given time, I think you would have actually figured it out. That's why I had to do something to throw you off track. I needed to buy myself some time.
So you faked your death?
You have to admit, it's a great alibi. No one ever suspects the dead person. I've been playing with all your minds for some time now, making you all do what I wanted. Some of it was to help my cause. Some of it was just for fun.
Tony was at least 50 meters away from me, so it was hard to get a good reading on whether or not he was under Fora's control. Like the rest of the zombie audience, Tony had his attention focused on Fora and Ona as they spoke, and the unfocused gaze of his eyes made me fearful that he was indeed Fora's mental slave. Then he glanced at me. It was fast, the briefest of nanos, and subtle, but I saw it. Then he quickly touched his forehead with his index finger and pulled gently on his earlobe.
He's with us.
How do you know?
That thing he just did, touched his forehead and pulled his ear. When we played baseball together as kids, that was our sign for the hit and run. He's letting me know that he's ready to go.
That's good to know. And how exactly does that help us?
No idea. Give me a couple of nanos, and I'll think of something.
So what were you up to, Fora?
Fora smiled in a way that even from a distance sent chills up my spine. She made a motion with her hand, and the floor immediately in front of her opened as a glimmering metal device slowly rose from beneath the stage.
Oh, this isn't good. It's never good when they bring out a machine.
Villains do seem to relish these dramatic reveals.
Do you recognize it? It's Daddy's greatest legacy!
You don't mean...
Yes! The D-cubed! The end of all that is!
I guess I should have seen that coming.
The D-cubed seemed to consist of 2-meter-high rectangular metallic pillars covered with electrodes and about 100,000 nanochips.
That's it? That little thing's the doomsday device?
That's the detonator. My sensors indicate that the actual device has been built into the sub-basement of the casino and currently extends 10 kilometers into the Earth's crust.
Well, all right then. It's much more impressive. How do we disable it?
I haven't even begun to scan its inner workings yet.
I could shoot it. It's worked before.
Yes. Unfortunately, that's not an option in this case, since destroying the detonator would, in all likelihood, activate the entire device.
So what do we do?
I'm trying to scan it, but it's heavily shielded, so deducing the safest way to disable it will take some time.
Isn't it ironic, then, that time is the one thing that we're short on right now?
Frankly, boss, I don't think that's the proper use of the word ironic.
Ona was clearly shaken by the revelation of the D-cubed. She did her best to keep Fora occupied while I formulated a plan.
Why, Fora? Why would you build such a thing?
To avenge Daddy!
Avenge?
They killed him because of this device! The world was afraid of his genius, so they killed him!
They paid him a fortune! They gave him a life of luxury!
In exchange for his brain?
Well, yes, but only a small part of it.
He was never the same after that. He forgot about his work. He forgot about the life he had built. Then he forgot about me!
Man, why do the bad guys always want to blame somebody else for their problems?
Boss, I think you're missing the big picture here. This isn't just a family matter where we can put all the quads in a room and let them fight it out amongst themselves.
Hey, you may be onto something there.
I get the feeling your mind isn't processing that statement the way I was hoping.
The plans for the D-cubed were destroyed by the World Council! How did you build this?
I read Daddy's mind, just before his operation.
The picture!
Yes.
You've been carrying this knowledge around with you all this time?
I've been waiting, Ona. Waiting for the time and the funds to make Daddy's dream a reality.
So your preaching was just a ruse? You stole people's fortunes to finance this?
I had to. Doomsday devices are expensive. And Daddy didn't leave me a fortune.
Oh, great! Throw that in my face again! I'm rich and you're not. Do you want your share? Fine, take it! Take it all! I don't care anymore!
Funny, isn't it? How a doomsday device inspires your generosity? It's too late, Ona!
So you're just going to destroy everything then? You're gonna commit simultaneous suicide and planetside as some sort of twisted vengeance-inspired homage to Daddy?
Not exactly. I've adjusted Daddy's design slightly. I'm going to destroy roughly 99% of the world. The device will create a subspace vacuum just a few shades shy of black hole intensity. I call it a brown hole.
Very creative.
The brown hole will rip the planet to atoms in a manner of nanos. But this small landmass will be protected. The community of New Vegas and the outlying area will survive. A white peg in a brown hole. It will be Daddy's ultimate revenge!
I've had enough of this. Follow my lead, Harv. I slid the wrist interface off my arm and hid it in the palm of my hand. Then, I walked toward Ona.
Excuse me, Miss Thompson. I mean, Fora. Hi, I'm Zach Johnson. We met when you were dead.
I know who you are. I've found you a bit annoying during the past few days, but I enjoyed making people try to kill you.
I live to entertain.
I turned my back squarely to Fora and gave Ona a hug.
Oh!
It surprised her, and she stiffened a bit.
Tony Rickey is down by the stage.
I slipped the wrist interface into the pocket of her jacket.
Use your telekinesis and get this to him.
I've never used telekinesis.
Well, now's a good time to start. If Fora can do it, I'm sure you can.
Ona nodded just a bit. I let go of her and took a few steps toward Fora to keep her attention. I quickly did the mind message thing with Harv again.
Tell me when you get to Tony.
Will do.
So, Fora, can I call you Fora?
Certainly. Can I call you Toad?
I've been called worse.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Ona take the wrist interface out of her pocket and hide it in her hand. Then she closed her eyes and concentrated as she dropped the interface. It fell, but didn't hit the floor. Instead, it stopped a few centimeters in the air as Ona's telekinetic power took hold of it. She smiled at her new ability and concentrated again. Very slowly, the interface began floating low to the ground through the crowd of onlookers toward the stage.
First of all, I just want to compliment your masterful job of making us all look like idiots.
It was easy.
No, don't sell yourself short. There's not a lot of people who can, you know, plot the end of the world while being dead. But I just want to make sure that I fully understand your plan. You built your father's doomsday device, right?
Modified ever so slightly, correct?
And to make up for what the world did to him,
You intend to detonate it?
Correct.
And destroy everything?
Everything except New Vegas and the immediate surroundings.
And that's your entire plan?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but I don't get it.
What do you mean?
Well, you're going to destroy the world out of vengeance, I get that. It's sort of an overly dramatic statement, but at least it's clear. My question is, why save Vegas?
So that I can create a utopia and be absolute ruler over it for all eternity.
Utopia? Flora, this is Vegas. Of all the places on Earth, this is the place you're gonna leave intact? Do you really want to look at crushed velvet and neon for all eternity?
Well, yes.
And what kind of utopia are you gonna create with a bunch of hookers and Elvis wannabes? And what do you think's gonna happen when they start to inbreed? 3 generations from now, you're gonna have a hunk of genetic defectives.
I suppose that may be true. But you can't always pick your mindless slaves.
And what are you gonna do for food?
I don't need food. My body has evolved so that it functions on solar energy.
What about them? The all-you-can-eat shrimp cocktail isn't gonna last forever. What do you do long-term?
Well, set up a food system. Probably agricultural.
You're gonna turn Vegas into a farm community? Is that how you really want to spend the next few generations? Teaching slot machine junkies and their offspring which end of a hoe to use? That's utopia?
As long as they worship me. That's all that's important.
Boss, I've reached Captain Ricky. What's the plan?
Get him up on the stage while I hold Flora's attention and tell him how to free 2M3.
That's your plan?
It's evolving as we speak.
You failed to see my larger purpose. This isn't just about me creating a utopia. This is about paying the world back for what they did to my father.
I saw Tony carefully move toward the containment vessels that held Tua and Thria. The throng of followers was too entranced by Fora to notice him, and at Harv's instruction, he began fiddling with the machinery.
So you're sending the world a message?
Exactly.
Do they know that?
Do they what?
Do the people of the world know why they're about to die? Have you sent any emails to the World Council, netcast any messages to the masses, written Surrender Dorothy in the Sky, that kind of thing?
Well, no. I've been feigning death for 3 days.
So the world at large doesn't know that you're doing this?
They'll find out soon enough.
But they won't know why. Doesn't that kind of ruin your statement?
What are you getting at here, Toad?
Harv, hurry it up. I'm running out of material here.
Oh, I think you're well past that point, boss. But we're ready when you are.
My point is that, as brilliant as you may think you are, you've made some serious mistakes here. You haven't properly planned your post-apocalyptic agenda. You haven't adequately publicized your doomsday event, and you've left your genocidal motivations open to radical speculation. But your biggest mistake in all of this is that you brought your sisters here.
Why is that a mistake? I wanted them to bear witness.
I glanced at Tony by the stage. He nodded to me, waiting for my signal. Both Tua and Thria were watching me as well, their hands pressed tightly against the polymer of the cells. Behind me, I could tell that Ono was realizing that the Nano of Truth was at hand. I took a deep breath and turned back to Fora.
Because they're gonna help me take you down.
I popped my gun into my hand and aimed at Fora. Tony took the cue. He cut the power to the containment vessels, and Tua and Thria broke free of their prisons. Ona gave me a small hug as she ran past me, charging her renegade sister. My gun blasts didn't hurt Flora, thanks to her nigh invulnerability, but the force of them pushed her away from the D-cube detonator, and by the time she regained her balance, Ona and her sisters were on her. Before long, the four of them were one heaving pile of supple flesh and untamed female fury. I was hoping Harv was recording this, as I knew that we could make a fortune on the netcast rights, if we survived. I got to the stage as quickly as I could, forcing my way through the throng of Fora followers who didn't quite understand what was happening. But to my horror, I saw a card shark stagger onto the stage and stumble toward the detonator.
Tony! Keep these people away from that machine!
Tony tackled him from behind, but more people were already rushing the stage.
I don't suppose this is all part of your plan, is it?
Not exactly.
Tony and I positioned ourselves on either side of the detonator to defend it against the oncoming horde. I set my weapon to heavy stun and started picking off attackers as they came. Tony was forced to use his fists, which were pretty darn effective, but we knew we wouldn't last long. Harv's hologram appeared beside me, and he did his best to scare people away by brandishing a holographic blaster. That was really an empty threat.
Yeah, we won't be able to hold this for long.
Harv, get inside this thing and disable it.
I'm trying, but it's shielded. I can't get past its defenses. And I sense something which appears to be another intelligence already inside the device. It's keeping me out.
Despite the fact that Tony fought like a 10-man wrecking crew and my gun was loaded with high-tech ammo, it was only a matter of time before Fora's lunatic followers overwhelmed
overwhelmed us.
Ona! We need some help here!
Ona was currently on the far edge of the stage, hanging onto Fora's back. Tua and Freya were each on one of Fora's arms, and they were all trying to keep her pinned face down on the stage.
Little busy right now, Zack!
Well, you and your sisters will have all eternity to fight one another if one of these zombies detonates this thing.
Tua, Freya, go help Zack. I'll handle Fora.
Tua and Freya let go of Fora and moved quickly toward Tony and me. Tua casually punched a bartender.
What do you need?
There are 1,000 people trying to get to this detonator. We need to protect it.
But Ona won't be able to handle Fora alone.
Yes, our place is with our sister.
We're the last line of defense against total destruction here. What's more important than that? This is your chance, ladies. Your one chance to set aside your selfishness and petty jealousies and do what's right. The fate of the entire world rests on your purple shoulders. I need you to show me now that those shoulders belong to heroes.
I'll give you this, Zack Johnson. You sure know how to finish a speech.
With a mighty swing of her shapely arm, Tua cleared the space around her. Then she rose 3 meters in the air and hovered there, her cape flowing dramatically behind her. Despite themselves, many of Fora's followers turned toward Tua. Even the ones pummeling Tony stopped what they were doing to look at her, a strange mixture of awe and fear in their eyes.
Ladies and gentlemen, the buffet is open. The house special tonight is justice.
She dove into the throng, scattering a group of showgirls and musicians like tenpins. Tua and Tony then both jumped into the throng, sending bodies flying all over the room. Freya graciously bowed her head to me.
It is an honor to battle beside you, Brother Johnson.
Please don't bring me into your family, Freya. I have enough troubles of my own.
Freya positioned herself on the opposite side of the detonator from her sister. And there she stood, back straight, head high, clutching her long green cape tightly to her.
The darkness of New Vegas may be powerful, but it will not withstand the powerful light of Vermont!
She began to glow, gently at first, a simple aura of orange, but it quickly grew in intensity, and before long she'd become a voluptuous pillar of iridescence. Then she flung open her cape and let it billow outward like something alive, its lining seemingly composed of shining white mist.
Come, warriors of the mist! Let's kick some Armageddon-loving asses!
And suddenly an army of creatures emerged from the folds of her cape. Winged nymphs, elves and dwarves, gnomes, fauns and satyrs, unicorns, griffins, shiny green dragons. It was like someone had broken the handle on a Dungeons & Dragons spigot. And as the fantasy creature army, together with a grandiose superhero, battled the oncoming dark horde, I felt the walls of reality, not to mention good taste and decency, start to splinter around me.
I may never read genre fiction again.
I left Tony, Tua, and Freya to battle the New Vegas army and went to help Ona, who more than had her hands full with Fora. The two of them had tumbled off the stage and were now trading blows and insults in the far end of the ballroom.
I see you still have that moral objection to bathing.
And you're still wearing that open all-night sign on your legs.
How do you want to break this up?
I have no idea. And I think we're running out of time.
What do you mean?
Nothing. Any chance you'll get through the D-Cube defenses soon?
Still working on it. By the way, there's an incoming call from Carol. Should I tell her you're busy?
No!
Are you sure? You are kind of busy.
Put her through, Harv.
Captain Ricky still has the portable interface, but I can feed this through the mental link. Audio only, though. I don't think your cortex can handle direct visual feeds.
Just put her through!
What's going on, Carol?
How's it going down there?
I turned back toward the battle.
Whoa, Lordy Mom!
A fire-breathing green dragon, ridden by a female dwarf, chased Fat Elvis and three hookers out of the ballroom.
Pretty much according to plan, I guess. Forrest built the D-cubed. Did you know that?
We feared as much.
How much time do I have left?
30 minutes. Listen, Theo, I'm going to send you down a little something that might help. Can you get close to Fora for me?
I turned back to where Ona and Fora were duking it out.
I don't have to stay long, do I?
No, just tell me when you're there, so I can lock onto her position. Then get clear when I tell you.
Got it.
I cautiously made my way toward the battling titans. They weren't just hitting each other physically, they were mentally hammering each other as well.
Doss, you're really going at it.
Their psionic energy is off the charts. Good thing you're wearing the side blockers.
I gently touched the side blockers in my ears and felt a little spark of inspiration. Could I survive without them? Having you in my head supposed to protect me from psionic attacks.
To some extent, yes. But this is far beyond the norm.
How long could I last without them?
I can't be certain. Not enough data.
Theo, what are you doing?
Carol, just be ready with whatever you have and wait for my signal. Oh, by the way, do you think you could help Harv boost my psi defenses?
Theo, I'm in a spaceship 300 kilometers above you in space.
So? You're linked to me via Harv. I'm betting you can transfer some defensive energy over that link.
I didn't think you liked to gamble.
Sometimes, my dear niece, you have to toss the dice and hope for a seven.
I'll give it a try.
I gripped my gun tightly and moved a little closer to Ona and Fora. I could see gleaming bits of metal through the holes they'd torn in the floor. That machinery under the floor. That's the D-cubed, isn't it?
Yes.
Battling a superwoman over the fate of the Earth atop a doomsday device. And to think my guidance counselor told me to go into the dietary.
Boss, what's going on?
Don't worry about it, Harv. I just need you and Carol to protect my mind when the time comes. I raised my gun and aimed it at the two grappling women. Big bang, misdirection. Ona! Ona turned toward the sound of my voice for the briefest of nanos, and as I planned, that was all the room Fora needed. Ona flew through the air, crash landing into the far wall. She looked a bit dazed, but otherwise unharmed. That's when I made my move. As planned, the blast streaked toward the far wall of the ballroom, then turned sharply and flew straight at Fora. They didn't hurt her, of course, simply forced her to stagger back. They got her attention. Out of instinct, she turned in the direction from which the blasts had come, and because of the misdirection, that left her back wide open to me. I ran at her full tilt. There was a small pile of rubble just behind her, so I used it as a ramp and leapt into the air. Arms spread and head high, like a dive bomber on a suicide run. Fora heard me coming and turned, but not soon enough. And I landed solidly on her back, wrapping my arms around her neck and my legs around her waist.
Lock on now, Carol!
Got it! Get clear!
Not yet!
I let go of Fora's neck and pulled the side blockers out of my ears. As soon as I did, my head was hit with a wave of psionic energy so incredible, I nearly lost consciousness.
Fora suddenly seemed less horrifying than before. Actually, she seemed rather wise and honorable. It occurred to me then that living in New Vegas with her to watch over me might not be so bad after all. I could buy a house on the Strip, maybe meet a nice showgirl, raise a family.
Boss, Fora Psi-Attack is warping your thinking. Snap out of it.
Come on, Theo, shake it!
Harv and Carol's psionic defenses in my head kicked in, and I regained my senses just as Fora grabbed me with fists like atomic vices.
I'm gonna rip you to pieces, Toad. Then I'm going to obliterate this planet.
She was pushing at my mind, concentrating her psionic powers directly on me now. And despite Harv and Carol's help, I was in more pain than I had ever been in before. But that wasn't about to stop me. I gripped the side blockers tightly in my hands and shoved them hard into Fora's ears. They activated upon contact with her ear canal and latched onto her mind. I had no idea what side blockers would do to a powerful Psi, but I had a feeling that it wouldn't be pretty. And I was right. Her scream was mental as much as sonic, and the force of it nearly ruptured my eardrums from the inside. Then her body began to shudder as her psionic powers began to brown out. She lost her grip on my shoulders, and we both fell to the ground. She pawed desperately at her ears, but her hands weren't steady enough to remove the blockers. I scrambled clear as she rolled onto her knees, shaking so hard it looked as though she'd swallowed a jackhammer.
She's overloading the blockers. They won't last much longer.
You won't have to. I took off running.
Now, Carol!
There was a blinding flash of light 20 meters directly above Fora as something very large suddenly materialized. It was an egg-shaped device, slate gray in color, and seemingly made entirely of rock. It was 4 meters tall, 5 meters wide, and probably a dozen metric tons in weight.
Now there's something you don't see every day, a Gladian escape pod.
The pod was standard issue for all Gladian deep space vessels. It was a kind of lifeboat for use in emergencies. I was to learn later that it was a highly sophisticated device, engineered to sustain and protect life from the vacuum of deep space, the rigors of temperatures approaching absolute zero or the heat of a solar flare. It was a wondrous device, the pinnacle of Gladian technology. But Carol, like me, a fan of old animated cartoons, was using it as a giant anvil. The pod landed directly on Fora's spasming form. The shockwave blew everyone off their feet. A sudden calm fell over the room. Dazed and confused, the New Vegas Army looked around at their surroundings.
Tony, Tua, Three, and Ona slowly made their way toward me as I gingerly lifted my aching body to a standing position. The Gladian pod now sat atop a pile of rubble. The D-cube remained intact, but it was now covered in dust and debris.
Did I get the beach?
You got her, Carol. You got her. Tony and Tua quickly got the New Vegas civilians, who are now free of Forest Psionic control, clear of the building. They all seemed very happy to go, although some were a little upset when they heard that the hotel would not be refunding their room deposits. Thria somehow managed to get most of her fairy realm creatures back into her cape. In the process of all this, Tony returned my wrist in her face. A few nanos later, we all turned our attention back to the D-cubed. You sure it's still functional?
It's very functional, boss. The battle and even Carol's little surprise package didn't seem to hurt it.
How do we disarm it, then?
The most logical place to attack is still the firing mechanism. Once we disarm that, we can figure out how to dismantle the rest.
Let's just hurry. We don't have much time left.
Before what?
Trust me, you don't want to know. Nerv's hologram shrugged and disappeared into the device.
That's odd. The defenses seem a little thinner than before, and that presence I felt earlier seems to have disappeared as well.
What do you mean, presence?
I mentioned that before, didn't I? It seemed as though there was something else in the machine when I tried to enter it earlier.
It hadn't registered before, what with the fighting and all, but I had a strong suspicion now as to what the other intelligent presence had been.
Perhaps Miss Thompson was psionically powering the mechanism's defenses herself, and now that she's, well, you know, squished, the defenses are no longer active. Long story short, this shouldn't take long.
Good, but next time, lead with the long story short part.
Zack, may I have a nano with you alone, please?
I turned toward Ona, ready to tell her that it wasn't the time, because it really wasn't. But the look in her eyes stopped me. In the short time I'd known her, I'd seen Ona Thompson's face exude about 1,000 emotions, more than 999 of which were probably fake. But the emotion I saw at that nano was something I hadn't seen from her before, and one that I didn't think she could fake, even if she tried. It was shame. Hart, you're okay, right?
Fine, boss. I'll let you know when I'm in.
I nodded to Ona, and she led me to a secluded corner of the ballroom away from the others.
I realize that I've put you through a lot the past few days. I don't think most people would have put up with me for this long, at least not without me warping their minds. And I doubt that anyone could have done what you've done. So, thank you.
You're welcome. But we're not out of danger yet.
Tell me, what do you think will happen to Tua and Thria after all this?
You mean, if we live?
Yes, of course.
Well, they did try to kill you in Fora. I have no idea how the police, the legal system, or the media will handle that. If history means anything, I'm sure they'll come out of it okay. Probably with big media deals. She turned away and looked at the Gladian space pod and the metric tons of rubble that currently sat atop her rogue sister.
What kind of person does that make me, Zack? What kind of woman drives her sisters to the point where they'd kill her, or destroy the entire planet, rather than be her friend?
I'd say a woman with three very crazy sisters.
I appreciate the sentiment, but we both know that's not true. I've treated them terribly. I've treated the world terribly. I was created by my father to be a superwoman, but somewhere along the way, I became a super bitch.
Well, I suppose recognizing your problem is the first step toward dealing with it. And I like to think that it's never too late to change. Oh, provided, of course, we live.
I agree. And I'm going to start by giving Tua and Thria their share of Daddy's fortune.
Haven't you been doing that all along? By funding their shows?
You found out about that, did you? I did that because they needed something. I just didn't trust them with their full share of the fortune.
What about Fora's share?
That will go to charity, along with my own.
Really?
I've wasted enough wealth. It's time I put it to good use.
That's very noble, Ona. One thing, though.
Yes?
Don't give away your fortune until after you've paid my bill.
Boss, I think we have a problem.
You mean other than having a doomsday device to disarm?
Yes and no. I've gotten past the detonator's defenses, but it turns out that this isn't the detonator after all. It's a decoy, designed to take our attention away from the actual D-cube trigger.
Great. Any idea where the actual detonator is?
Zack?
Ona touched me on the shoulder.
I think I might be able to answer that.
I turned toward Ona, saw her staring at the rubble, and then turned to follow her gaze. Uh-oh. Two or three Antoni turned from their positions about the room and came toward us. Before long, the five of us, six if you count Hart, were watching the rubble pile shift and shake, none of us wanting to admit to ourselves what we knew was happening. Finally, the Gladian pod lurched drastically to the side. Then we saw a form rise from the dust and debris of the pile. She was covered with filth, her body seemingly aching with every movement as she moved toward us. She clutched a small metallic device in her left hand, holding it closely like a cherished keepsake as she moved, and every one of us knew immediately that the device she held was the remote trigger for the D-cubed.
All right then, where were we?
She'd been hurt. The Psyblockers had affected her powers and her invulnerability, so our attacks, the Gladian pod especially, had damaged her. Sadly, though, it hadn't been enough. And as she walked toward us now, her strength seemed to grow with every passing nano. Impressive.
I'm not like you, Zack. I don't need a computer wired to my brain to be all I can be.
I had to give her credit. That hit home hard. Flora had peeked into my soul and figured out that I haven't totally accepted my gestalt relationship with Harv.
I've been very patient with you all. I've outlined my plan for you in detail. We have discussed the moral ramifications of my proposed actions, had a spirited debate over my current mental state, and have enjoyed some very colorful, high-concept fisticuffs. But the game has come to an end. It's time to turn out the lights. Push this button and destroy Earth once and for all!
Before you do that, there's something you need to know.
And what would that be?
Zack?
Hold that thought, Flora. I gotta take this. Carolette appeared on my wrist in her face.
I'm sorry to say that I think it might be time for you-know-who to do you-know-what.
Not yet.
Sorry, Theo, but things aren't looking very promising for you right now.
It's under control, trust me.
If it were up to me, I would, but the Gladians are being very insistent.
You're the Psy. Make them listen. I put her on hold. This is all I need. Harv?
Yes, Walls?
Put a trace on this call from Carol and get a lock on the location. It should be about 300 kilometers directly overhead in Earth orbit.
In orbit?
In orbit.
Okay, I got her.
Good. Do you still play chess with the Earth defense computer?
Twice weekly.
Pass those coordinates onto it. Carol is in a cloaked spaceship. Tell the defense computer to bathe the ship with an ion ray so that it can track it if it changes course. Tell the computer to feel free to destroy the ship if it attacks, and make sure the action is netcast planet-wide.
Boss, Carol's on that ship.
Do it, Harv. Okay, Carol, tell the Gladians that if they don't back off right now, Earth's defense computer will blow them out of the sky. It'll be netcast to the entire planet, and the Gladian race won't get another speck of Earth dirt.
You're not bluffing here, are you?
We're negating the Gladian cloaking system with an ion ray right now. It should register on the Gladian sensors. Tell them to consider that a shot across their bow. Carol turned away. Then she turned back.
They accept your terms.
Thanks. I have to get back to the crazy woman with the doomsday device now.
You have got a lot of nerve, little man.
Yeah, I get that a lot. But I think you'll find this worth the wait. Computer?
Here, boss.
Not you, Harv.
What do you mean?
Computer! Everyone looked around, Fora included, none of them really knowing what they were looking for.
What is this? Some kind of trick?
Computer?
Yes, Mr. Johnson.
Computer, what are you doing here?
Put the detonator down, Fora. Destroying everything is not a healthy way to release your anger.
When I want your opinion, computer, I'll write a program.
Your motives are understandable, Fora, but your actions are well beyond the scope of rational.
Don't pretend to understand my motives. I don't need a moral lesson from a machine.
Tua, Thria, and Tony had snuck closer to me.
We could rush her now while she's distracted.
That won't be necessary.
Your actions are meaningless, Fora. All this will bring you nothing. It will not avenge your father. It will not ease your pain.
How would you know of my pain?
I know. Because I am your father.
Well, that was unexpected.
But it was Fora who was the most affected. Her eyes were wide, and she staggered backward.
No. No, that's not true. That's impossible.
I am not a good father. I never was, and I admit that freely. You girls became independent so quickly that it seemed as though you didn't need me anymore. I wanted to provide for you, so I designed the D-cubed, knowing that the world would inevitably buy it.
You designed the D-cubed for money?
Of course! I never intended for it to ever actually be built! What am I, insane? No offense, Fora.
But you died!
Yes, funny thing about that. You see, I didn't think that the World Council would be so picky about terms when they paid me to destroy the D-cubed plans. I didn't expect them to insist on giving me a partial lobotomy. So, before agreeing to undergo the surgery...
You made a backup copy of your brain and stored it on the computer, thinking that after the surgery you would reprogram yourself.
But something went awry during the reprogramming. There was an explosion which destroyed your body.
And left me stranded in the computer, yes. It's all very understandable, don't you think?
But you died. Why didn't you tell us you were alive?
Well, truthfully, you all seemed to get along fine without me. And if word had leaked out that I was actually alive, then pretty soon the World Council would have suspected that I wasn't lobotomized after all, and the whole thing would have started all over again. It just seemed better for all concerned if I remained dead.
And the will?
Yes, leaving my entire fortune to Ona. That was a mistake. I was lobotomized at the time. You can't hold me responsible for that. I figured you girls would sort it all out in the end.
But they didn't.
Yes. Ona, you showed very poor judgment by not sharing your fortune with your sisters.
I'm sorry, Daddy.
Tua and Thria, I'm also very disappointed in the two of you. How many times did I tell you as children that attempted sororicide is not something we do in our household?
We're sorry, Daddy.
And Fora, I'm sorry, but destroying the planet in my name is not suitable behavior for a superwoman.
You're right, Daddy.
Fora hung her head low.
Now, put the detonator down and we'll start setting things right.
Fora slowly lifted her head.
You're right. You weren't a good father.
She raised the detonator above her head.
Fora, no!
And pushed the button. A blast of black light erupted from the detonator in Fora's hand and flew high into the air like a Stygian bolt of lightning. The bolt reached its apex 20 meters into the air and burst into a series of tendrils spanning out into different directions, covering the room umbrella-like before streaking back to the ground and finding the surface of a D-cubed. Upon contact with the light, the D-cubed hummed to life, the entire surface of the Doomsday device beginning to glow with its own dark light, bathing all of us in its murky, planet-eating glow. Then, all at once, the dark light began to contract, shrinking like a silk cloth caught in a vacuum cleaner, collapsing in upon itself at its center.
What?
Which in this case happened to be Fora, who still held the detonator above her head.
Very clever, Father.
She closed her eyes and spread out her arms. Her body surged with power and energy. The energy ripped from her body into the D-cubed, which seemed to cause the machine to jump to life. The dark light stopped contracting and began expanding, this time faster than before, creating a swirling vortex of energy in its wake.
Uh-oh, this isn't good. Not good at all. She's psionically linked with the machine, stopping me from stopping her.
Block her out.
I'm trying. I can slow her down, but I can't stop her. She's too powerful.
I'll stop her.
Tua leapt at her sister. The energy emanating from Fora acted as a shield and deflected Tua, sending her flying off in the other direction.
I'll teach our little sister a lesson.
No, Ona. You have to beat her at her own game. She may be more powerful than any of us individually, but if we team up, cooperate, we can take her.
What?
We have three superwomen and two supercomputers here. Together, you folks should be able to take out an army. One quite insane superwoman should be a piece of soy cake.
Zack's right. Together, nothing can stop us.
Ona focused her attention on Fora. Thria walked up to Ona, took her hand, and proceeded to focus her glare on Fora. Tua made her way back to us from across the room and shook her head.
I still think I should smash her.
Tua, stick with the program.
Tua took Thria's other hand. She then joined her two sisters in what I could only assume was a mental bombardment of Fora. The four sisters were locked in a combat of the minds. Fora started to shake, beads of sweat starting to form on her forehead.
I will not lose to you, sisters!
Dr. Thompson, are you in yet?
Almost.
Arp, give him a boost. Attack from two fronts.
Right, boss.
Tony looked at me.
I'm not gonna just stand here and do nothing. It's not my M.O.
He moved to the theater floor and grabbed a chair. He ripped it off its hinges and hurled it at Fora. Now, I saw myself as the coach of this little super team. I figured I shouldn't let my players have all the fun. I popped my gun into my hand. The mental and physical onslaught was too much for Fora.
No!
The black light swirled around her, binding her in nothingness, engulfing her in an antimatter cocoon. It grew in intensity as it shrank in mass and became impossible to look upon. We all covered our eyes as the light reached its peak intensity. The last thing I saw before turning away was Fora's hand reaching toward us as it was consumed in the black light. When we opened our eyes, Fora was gone, as well as the D-cubed, leaving only the 10-kilometer-deep shaft in the earth in which it had once stood. The only proof that it had been there at all. None of us spoke at first. The nanos somehow seemed too fragile to withstand the weight of our words. But eventually, Ona managed to whisper what everyone was wondering.
Is she gone?
Doomsday devices are such stupid things. Why on earth would anyone ever build one?
I don't think that officially qualifies as an answer to Miss Thompson's question.
You didn't just shut off the device. You reversed it. Set it for self-destruct rather than Earth-destruct.
It seemed to be the only course of action. I warned her. I warned her.
As the sun was rising, Ona, Tua, and Thria, along with Dr. Thompson's computerized intellect, were preparing to depart, headed hopefully for the office of a very skilled team of family counselors. Before they left, each of them came to me to offer their goodbyes. Ona was the last of the sisters, walking up to me with her hands extended.
I want to thank you again, Zach, for everything you've done for me and for my family.
Don't mention it, Ona.
You not only proved my innocence, but you also helped me unlock my true power, my mind.
You're still going to share your money with your sisters and give a good portion of your wealth to charity, right?
Of course. With my newfound power, who needs money? I can bend the will of people to my needs.
I was pretty sure she was joking.
Boss, Dr. T wants to talk to you through the interface.
Fine.
Thank you for giving me my family back, Mr. Johnson.
I only wish I could have done more for Fora.
She was lost well before you met her. I suppose that's mostly my fault. I guess I was afraid. I wanted them to be an experiment that I could control. But it soon became apparent that they were much more than that. Much more than I could handle.
What's done is done. You can't let it eat up what's left of yourself. Sure, parents' actions and inactions have an influence on what their kids become, but the final choice is still up to the individual. Fora is just using you as a handy excuse for her problems. Just make sure you learn from your mistake. You need to be there for your remaining daughters. Make sure they don't pick up any unusual hobbies, like building doomsday devices.
You're a good man, Mr. Johnson. If I could pat you on the back, I would.
Don't worry about it. Just make sure your daughters don't decide to bring back any of your other inventions. The last thing the world needs is a new talking pet rock.
Indeed.
He was replaced on the screen by Harv's familiar face.
So what's going to happen when the World Council learns Dr. Thompson is still alive?
I'm not planning on telling them, are you?
Why, of course not.
Good. Then it's not our problem. I suspect if word does leak out, his girls can handle it.
So you knew all along that Miss Thompson's computer was actually her long-dead father?
Only at the end. He was too protective of the quads to be an ordinary computer. That and his use of the phrase, as you wish, were dead giveaways. No computer in its right circuit says stuff like that.
Indeed.
The Gladian sent down a team and studied the site for another 6 hours before they were satisfied that both Fora and the D-cubed were gone. I got the feeling that the Gladians weren't very comfortable with my knowing that they came within a few minutes of destroying North America. I know I sure wasn't. For now, though, we were parting company with the understanding that everything had worked out as well as could be expected. But you won't catch me vacationing on GLAAD 7 or 9 anytime soon. It was nearly noon when Tony and I loaded up his hovercraft for the ride back to New Frisco. He'd called the police commissioner earlier in the morning to learn that, now free of Fora's mind control, the commissioner had no recollection whatsoever of Tony's resignation. In fact, he was wondering why Tony wasn't in the office yet, and why Tony's badge was on his office desk. Tony covered as best he could. He told the commissioner that he had a pain in his neck and ended up taking a sick day. I tried not to take the pain in the neck thing personally. When I got back to my office in Frisco, Carol was sitting behind her receptionist desk, as if it were just another normal day. She smiled at me as I entered.
You did it, Tio. I knew you could.
Couldn't have done it without you, though. Thanks.
De nada. You're still upset that I took a second job, aren't you?
A bit, but I suppose things would have gotten even uglier if you hadn't been there, so I guess I should be grateful.
Are you going to show your gratitude with a raise?
You're not reading my mind, are you, Carol?
No.
How does 10% and a 20% portion of my bonus from Ona sound?
It sounds like you're back to being my favorite Tio. If you want, I can quit my second job.
No need for that. I kind of like knowing you're keeping an eye on the Gladians. I don't quite trust them. Just no more secrets from me, okay? Carol stood up and gave me a little peck on the cheek.
I'll do what I can.
Well, I guess that's somewhat reassuring. I went into my office.
From Carol, I think somewhat reassuring is all you can ask for, Zack.
Harv, you called me Zack.
That is your name, isn't it? Would you prefer I call you Zachary?
No, Zack will do just fine. You've just always called me boss in the past.
I've grown. Because while you are still technically my boss, although come to think of it, you don't actually pay me, I also consider you my friend. I figured that if we share the same brain, we should at least be on a first-name basis.
Though a part of me was a little scared by the fact that my computer was now on a first-name basis with me, another even bigger part of me was kind of glad. I agree, buddy. I totally agree.
Good. In that case, as your friend, I'm advising you to go directly to the children's clinic and pick up Dr. Gavada. You owe her a very romantic and expensive dinner.
Sounds like Carol, Harv, Tony, and even Ona 2 and 3 all gained a lot from this experience.
Yep, Zachary Nixon Johnson, PI and personal growth advisor. I should raise my rates.
Do you think the Quad's newfound friendship will last?
I hope so. The world may not be quite as entertained as they were by the fighting, but I think it'll be better off. Ona's given away billions in the last hours alone.
True, but she's still the richest being in the world.
Which is a good thing, considering that I have her on my speed dial.
Just make sure that's all you have her on, Chico.
Believe me, Miamor, you are the only superwoman in my life. My name is Zachary Nixon Johnson. I am the last private detective on Earth. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
The Doomsday Brunette is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2004 by John Zacor and Lawrence Ganem. Recorded by arrangement with Dahl Books Incorporated. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Elizabeth Jernigan, Danny Gavigan, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Jeff Baker, Bradley Smith, Eric Messner, Tim Getman, Gary Tells, Evan Casey, Alyssa Wilmoth, Elliot Dash, Ren Casey, and Mort Shelby. Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Richard Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Pressbot crowd performed by Alex Morris, Tracy Kite, Rick Murray, Frank Ibarra, James Henshaw, Kathleen Pulver, Peter Gabriel, Rod Cross Sr., Jim Yates, Todd Humble, Amelia McKenzie Gray Hire, and Bill Passmore. If you enjoyed the Doomsday Brunette, be sure to look for the next episode in the Nuclear Bombshell series, The Radioactive Redhead, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
is blossoming throughout all of Holtz. Slaughter and death spread to every corner of the land. The people cry out for a savior, and Branson Garabond will have to make the ultimate decision. What does he owe? The epic saga continues in R.A. Salvatore's The Dame. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.